Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington, D.C.
Speaking as at now, I can safely and confidently tell you that Zambia's democracy is under siege, under very, very serious threat.
Zambia's former president, Edgar Lungu, says the country's democracy is under threat.
The ANC has to talk to other parties because it didn't reach 50% plus one threshold.
South Africa's ruling ANC loses its parliamentary majority.
Let the police carry out an investigation before jumping to any conclusion, because how do you say you're investigating, but then you jump into a conclusion, you know?
And the Ugandan police stop all political activities of the opposition National Unity Platform. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Zambia's former president Edgar Lungu says the country's democracy is under siege. This after expressing concern about efforts by the authorities to stifle dissent by using state institutions, including the police and the judiciary, to go after opponents of the administration, as well as stop opposition political activities. His remarks come after the recent arrest of the former First Lady Esther Lungu and children over graft allegations. This, as a planned opposition rally on Saturday was stopped by police over security concerns. The government has so far denied clamping down on the opposition. Supporters of the ruling party say opposition leaders are using hate speech to reduce the government's popularity. Former Zambian President Edgar Lungu tells me that the country's democracy must be protected.
Speaking as at now, I can safely and confidently tell you that Zambia's democracy is under siege, under a very, very serious threat. Like today, this afternoon, a party belonging to the alliance of political parties in the opposition, New Heritage Party, was scheduled to hold a public rally in the Chipata compound. And the notice was given, and all the protocols were done, complied with to the letter. But alas, today we saw a group of policemen armed to the teeth with the United Party for National Development, UPND, the ruling party, thugs carrying machetes, pangas, you name it, all sorts of weapons, and saying we won't hold this meeting here. And the police were watching. So there is no democracy to talk about.
Mr. President, some of your critics are saying that similar things happened during your presidency and that CADES, or so supporters from the Patriotic Front, disrupted activities of the UPND when they were in opposition. And that they said you don't have the moral right, they said, to criticize similar actions that are happening now. How do you respond to that?
I don't know whether I have the moral right or not, but I can tell you, if it was bad for the Zambian people to be done by me, it can't be better to be done by HH. That's why the Zambian people said no to PF. And I think, as a person who's been there, and I believe that if they said it was bad, it must still be bad for the president and his ruling political party to do it. And you can't say that because my party did it, I shouldn't condemn them. After all, I'm a better place to even advise him and say, my friend, at the rate you're going, you plunge the country into chaos and your reign might be one term office.
Mr. President, you talked about some politicians from the opposition who have been arrested. We also heard about your wife and some of your children being arrested over issues of graft. Some people are saying that if somebody has committed a crime, you are a lawyer, they should be dealt with according to the law. And your wife and children were arrested. They are going through the legal process. Why wouldn't you allow the legal process to unfold? And then you can react. How do you respond to that?
Excuse Excuse me, Peter. I'm not stopping any legal process being done. You know, I have been called a thief, corrupt, and all sorts of names. But no one has told me what I stole or wherein lies my corruption. And I told the people, I said, if you find any corruption, please bring it forth. And they've not done that. They've decided to peel my family like an onion by ripping off the peel and trying to get at me instead of just coming for me. You see, my wife was unemployed. She was depending on me. And I was supporting her like every other person supports their wife. You support your wife. You support your children. And if you support them, and then they utilize that money for some purposes, and they even tell the law enforcement agency that it's this guy who provided the resources, why can't you go for him and ask him, how much was your salary? How did you acquire this property? Mind you, I was a lawyer before I became a politician. And I wasn't just a run-of-the-mill lawyer. I was one of the top-notch lawyers. That I can tell you. But you see, I made my money. And I brought my children into business. And they began working on their own. And so did my wife. So how we acquired the so-called money, wealth, whatever, is there for people to see. There's a track record from my practice as a lawyer to my political time to now. And this thing did not just come overnight. So for me to get everybody, all my friends, and say you are thieves because you belong to Edgar, tell me one contract, just one contract, which you think I participated in and got money, or I got a bribe. Nothing is coming through. But all these guys have been saying, oh, let's say he was running a crypto regime and so on.
Let's talk about bread and butter issues. You raised issues of the high cost of living in Zambia after you officially returned to active politics. But your critics are saying things were bad and that some of the policies that you implemented while you were president has affected the cost of living right now. So they said it's not fair for you to criticize the effect of what you did in office, which wrongs they are trying to make right. How do you respond to that?
Peter, I didn't set the time frame for them to fix it. Yeah, they said we'll fix it by 14 hours in the morning, swear me in 10 o'clock, 12 hours, 14 hours or 2 o'clock, I'll fix it. That time frame was not set by me or my opposition party, PF, or any other parties for that matter. And the gravity of the situation obtaining during the time I was president was known. And the fundamentals were known. And these guys were able to convince everyone that they had solutions on their fingertips. And elsewhere, they even said, I've got friends who give me $28.5 billion. And in a very short time, 3 months, 5 months, we'll get things sorted out. But where are these monies coming from? Where are these monies?
That was Zambia's former president, Edgar Chagwa Lungu. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Frank Bwalya, the Director General of the National Media Committee of the ruling UPND's presidential support program, says Zambia's democracy is not under threat. The former High Commissioner to Australia and the former President Lungu denies accusations the administration is undermining democracy. He instead blames the opposition for disturbing the peace to drive down the government's popularity.
A lot of politicians in Zambia have realized that Zambia is a country where the rule of law prevails, where if you break the law will visit you. What we can say is that Zambians in the political space, the politicians to be specific, have realized is in a hurry to develop and will not entertain politicians who try to cry foul each time they break the law willfully. That is what is happening in Zambia.
But Frank, the question a lot of people are asking is, the government is using the police and other state institutions to suppress any dissent, to stop including the former president from going to even jog or even have a rally today. Madam Kateka's Heritage, New Heritage Party was supposed to meet. It was disrupted by the police and what they called thugs from the UPND, the ruling party.
What we can say concerning the jogging of President Edgar Gachagua Lungu, the former president, under whom I served, is that no one stopped him from jogging. What the police advised was that as a public figure, when he's jogging on the public roads, he has to ensure that crowds don't gather, and I don't mean a lot of people, but the few people that would gather don't disrupt the smooth running of public life.
But how can he prevent that? He is just jogging or moving around. How can he prevent people from coming around him?
It is possible to prevent that. If you are going to jog in a public road that is usually crowded, that will happen. Here we are talking about politics, where somebody knows very well and is anticipating a certain reaction from society. It was such kind of reaction that started making members of the public complaining about the disruption of traffic, disruption of public life, which made the police advise the former president to be wary, to be conscious of such kind of situation. He was never stopped from jogging.
But here you have supporters of the Patriotic Front saying that the arrest of his wife, the former first lady, and his children on allegations of corruption. Of course, they have been released on bail, but some Zambians are saying this is political persecution one-on-one, and that since he came back to join active politics, they are targeting his family to weaken him and to cause him great discomfort. Is this what your party is doing?
To the contrary. The reason President Edgar Gachagua Lungu gave to get back into politics was that his family was being persecuted. So PF members cannot say today that because President Edgar Gachagua Lungu, the former president, has come back into politics, that's why his family members are being arrested. Because himself, President Lungu, said it, he's on record. I'm getting back into politics because I have to save the party that made me president, and because of the way I'm being treated in terms of the police going for my family.
Frank Bwalya is the Director General of the National Media Committee of the ruling UPND's Presidential Support Program. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. The final results of a tumultuous South African election are expected to be declared late Sunday, though what is already evident is that the governing party has lost its majority. For VOA, Kate Bartlett reports on what looks to be a new era of politics for the Rainbow Nation.
South Africa was on a precipice Saturday night. With all ballots now counted, results showed that after 30 years of dominance, the ANC of Nelson Mandela had been punished at the polls, gaining around 40% of the vote, a sharp drop from 57% in 2019. While the official declaration of results is expected on Sunday evening, this means South Africa is set to enter a new era of coalition politics, said Professor David Everett from Johannesburg's Wits School of Governance.
It'll be a good thing because although the ANC under Mandela and Mbeki started well, it ended in a terrible trough of corruption, state capture.
Analysts say it was that corruption, as well as high unemployment and general failure to do more to improve the lives of poor black South Africans, that saw President Cyril Ramaphosa's party humiliated in this election. But the question is, who will the ANC partner with? That decision will have a huge effect on Africa's most developed economy and the country's political future. Businesses will be rooting for a coalition with the Democratic Alliance, for years the official opposition, which came in second with more than 21% of the vote. A surprise third, nudging out Julius Malema's populist economic freedom fighters, was the Mkhonto wa Sizwe Party, or MK, led by former President Jacob Zuma. Despite doing better than expected with about 14% of the vote, mainly thanks to the former president's popularity with fellow ethnic Zulus, Zuma on Saturday night said MK was rejecting the results. The elections held Wednesday have been widely declared free and fair, but MK made unsubstantiated claims of rigging. MK says it could seek a recount or a revote. Zuma warned the Electoral Commission against provoking people by declaring the official result on Sunday as planned. Zuma's comeback has been the story of this election, and his new party's success ate into the ANC's share of the vote. He is bitter at his former party, the ANC, for forcing him to resign in his second term as president in 2018 over corruption scandals. Though he's still leading the party, Zuma cannot sit in parliament with MK because of a contempt of court conviction. His brief jailing in 2021 caused the worst riots in South Africa's post-apartheid history, with more than 350 people killed. Next year, Zuma is to face trial over an alleged corrupt arms deal. Political analyst Sandile Swana said Zuma may be hoping for a deal regarding an amnesty around his legal woes.
Zuma does not need to be in office, but he does need his purpose to be in office and run those purpose. But he also does not need to want to run his purpose from jail, because the arms deal case, which is in progress, which needs to be stopped from Zuma's perspective, can cause a situation where he has to serve 15 years in jail. So he will want that resolved.
Once official election results are declared, the ANC has 2 weeks to engage in coalition talks before forming a government. There is speculation Ramaphosa may be forced by his party to resign after the ANC's poor showing. Kate Bartlett, VOA News, Johannesburg.
Still in South Africa, the Vice-Chancellor of the Tshwane University of Technology says coalition talks to form the next government is a must for the governing African National Congress, or ANC, which lost its majority in the just-ended national elections. Professor Tinyiko Maluleka also agrees that the biggest winner of the polls is the five-month-old opposition Nkonto Wesizwe, or MK party, led by former President Jacob Zuma. The latest figures from vote counting show the ANC won about 40% of the vote. Its nearest competitor, the Democratic Alliance, had about 21%, while the MK party garnered 15%. For analysis, I reach Professor Tinyiko Maluleka.
There is actually no alternative. The ANC has to talk to other parties because it didn't reach 50% plus one threshold. In fact, not a single party reached that threshold. So coalitions are a matter of must. They are not a choice. They are obligatory.
And the ANC says, through Fikile Mbalula, the general secretary, that the ANC will reject any attempt by any of the political parties if they want the resignation of President Cyril Ramaphosa, and he's also asking for the speaker and finance ministry portfolios. Does the ANC really have, can they really make those demands in the negotiations?
Well, they have got a slightly higher number than everyone else, so they do have a bit of an upper hand, but not completely. It's horse trading. Every political party will put its own demands on the table. The ANC would want symbolically to maintain the presidency, and one understands that. And they are probably going to be allowed to do that. For example, the EFF says they are not going to choose a president for the ANC, but there are certain portfolios that they are interested in. So within 14 days, they will have to come to some agreement, and one hopes that it's a strong coalition, not one that will collapse after a short while.
Professor Tinyiko, some suggest that the result should be humbling for ANC because it's demonstrated arrogance in governance for a long time, and this is a warning to them. But then the demands they are making is not humbling enough. Your take?
Now, horse trading should not be described in terms of humility or non-humility. I don't think those terms are applicable to political coalition negotiations. It is in the nature of these negotiations that each party will make some demand, because each party wants something. I mean, the EFF says they want the finance ministry. Another party I had said they want the Home Affairs Ministry. ANC says we want the presidency. There's nothing abnormal about it. I don't think we should use humble and non-humble. What is true is that the results have indeed humbled the ANC. For the first time in 30 years, they are below 50. They almost fell below 40. So it's a very, very strong message that has been sent to them.
A lot of South Africans are saying that the Zuma-led Nkonto Wesizwe party appears to be the biggest winner, especially with 5 months of its formation and coming up to take supposedly votes from the ANC and the EFF to show approximately 15% of the votes in the national election. It's a significant achievement so far. Your take?
Yes, I agree completely. It's something almost miraculous that has happened, because they don't have a history. They were not in the last election, and they presumably did not have a machinery, branches in every corner of the country. Their systems were not supposedly in place. So it is quite amazing what they have achieved.
Professor Tinyiko Maluleka is the Vice Chancellor of the Tshwane University of Technology. He spoke with me from the South African capital, Pretoria. Nigeria's Information Minister says reforms undertaken by President Bola Ahmed Tinubu were necessary to move the country forward. Mohammed Idris also says Nigerians will soon see the benefits of the implemented policies, which he adds will improve living standards and boost local and international investor confidence. His remarks come as the administration marks a year since the president took power on May 29, 2023. But critics say reforms, including the removal of fuel subsidies, are making life difficult due to the ensuing inflation and increasing prices of food. For an assessment of the performance of the administration after 1 year in office, I reached Information Minister Mohammed Idris via video link. Here is the conclusion of the conversation.
So what amount of time? You said Nigerians should give you enough time for some of these policies to mature, for them to enjoy the benefit. What time frame are we looking at here?
It's difficult sometimes to say on so date all these reforms will bear fruition. I mean, it's not that mathematical. I can report the progress that we are making in that direction. Of course, when, for example, food prices shot up, government quickly intervened, released from our strategic grain reserve over 42,000 metric tons of assorted grains free to farmers. And then, you know, government also collaborated with rice millers to have about 60,000 metric tons of rice. It was unleashed in the market, and that, of course, shut down the price of commodities. Now, when exactly? Very soon. I will tell you that we are in the right direction. By the time this farming cycle is achieved, I mean, you know, the rains have just started, and you recall also that last year the dry season farming also was given a push. That was about 100 billion naira that the federal government itself put into dry season farming. We also had to take some financial support from the African Development Bank, over $130 million. Now, all these have been injected into agriculture. And now you have 3 times a year farming in some states like Jigawa, like Kano, like Kebbi, for example. Now, this will triple the kind of agricultural produce that we expect, and this will in turn also force down the prices of goods and services.
Your government put out some figures about some foreign direct investment inflows into Nigeria. Some of your critics are saying that with the currency flotation and the instability to the dollar and then some of these insecurity concerns, they are doubtful of the figures being inaccurate or inaccurate in their sense.
Only recently, the Minister of Industry, Trade and Investment announced that Nigeria has received over $30 billion in new commitments to the manufacturing sector across health, IT, and agriculture, and other sectors. Now, you can't have this kind of massive money coming to the economy that will not stimulate growth, that will not stimulate manufacturing. This, of course, will have to happen with young people, There are many of our young people there that are out there. Now is a great opportunity for them to get engaged. The government is bringing a lot of initiatives. Also know that you know, this year alone, government has set aside nearly 200 billion naira to stimulate activity in government. There is 50 billion naira to set aside for nano businesses, 75 billion naira for those, you know, in not so big enterprises, so loans, facilities are single digit interest, another 75 billion naira going into big time manufacturers. So all this is aimed at stimulating activity within the economy. And once that is achieved, of course, this will force down the price of goods and services. Our young people will get engaged. Crime will come down. Insecurity, hopefully, will also fizzle out if you juxtapose it with also the kind of activity that our government is doing.
Your critics are saying they give you 40% out of 100 of the performance of your government a year in office. How would you rate your government a year since you took over power?
Well, certainly far above that. I think that those that are rating government 40% don't seem to know the process that are you know, ongoing. Look at our power sector, for example. We need a lot of investment in the infrastructure to deliver power to our people. These are not things that you can just do in 3 months or in 6 months. Look at what we have done. Just 2 weeks ago, the president launched 3 critical gas infrastructure that will help to deliver gas, that will also deliver power to Nigerians. Now, all these things take time to put together. Indeed, when the MOUs were being signed by our partners, the NNPC gave the project about 2 years to mature. But because government also put a lot of pressure on everyone, we're able to deliver that in 11 months. I mean, if you plan for something to happen in 2 years and you're getting it done in 11 months, that certainly cannot be a 40% mark. Again, if you look at the direction that the economy is going, the kind of massive reforms that is happening, you can't say that you're just getting 40%. I understand that some of these reforms, the fruition of some of these reports are yet to be fully comprehended by Nigerians. I understand that. We also know that this will take a little while. But I believe that before the end of the year, many of these projects will become really very visible to Nigerians. And
Mohammed Idris is Nigeria's information minister. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja.
This is Border Crossing's host, Larry London. Hello there. Welcome to an hour of requests every day at 1500 Universal. I roll out the red carpet and I invite you onto the stage with me because you make the requests we play. Except on Tuesdays, we have the Spotlight Feature Artist of the Week. And coming up on this Tuesday's program, Bella Rios will join us. June is here. This is Border Crossings, and I hope you'll listen to the Voice of America.
In Uganda, the Opposition National Unity Platform, or NUP, is calling on the police not to politicize the accident which occurred during its latest campaign event. This after the police issued a statement to stop the party's political activities following an accident that left 2 people dead. The move, the police say, is to enable officers to carry out an investigation into the deadly accident at Maya along the Kampala-Masaka Highway. But the NUP says it's not fair for the police to stop its activities. For more reaction from the NUP, I read Joel Senyonyi, the spokesperson of the opposition party.
We are urging police not to politicize everything. Accidents happen on our roads every single day. Mr. Museveni's convoy has been involved in accidents several, almost every year. But you don't say that, okay, now these cars will not move anymore. We normally have tournaments that happen annually, different people. Sometimes there are accidents and people are excited. You don't stop the tournament, you deal with the accident. Now, this particular accident happened after whenever we are moving, there's people that do come to follow us. Sometimes an hour after we have left or that kind of thing. So we're ahead somewhere, and then we learned that there had been an accident someplace we had passed. Well, some people think that this was deliberate. This person could have done this to cause all the confusion and so on. We don't think so at this stage. Our thinking is that it was an accident.
Joel, isn't it the reason why the police want to investigate to find out if this was a true accident or if it was deliberate?
And that's correct. Actually, we are in favor of the investigation. Let the police carry out an investigation before jumping to any conclusion, because how do you say you're investigating, but then you're jumping to a conclusion, you know? it doesn't make sense. So what's the investigation for? Because the accident happened after we have moved, you know. But like I've said, normally people will come and follow us after even an hour or so. So we don't know whether these people were actually hurrying to come and join us, or it was deliberate, as some people are saying, or whatever. Our thinking is that it was an accident. But let police carry out an investigation. Whenever an accident happens on our roads every single day.
According to the police, during your recent meeting, you agreed to maintain discipline before, during, and after your mobilization rallies. And they said this was not the case. So basically, you went against what you promised the police to do.
But how? What did we do that was against any of our laws? We went, held a successful campaign activity in Masaka, and we returned home. Yeah, unfortunately, some people got involved in an accident somewhere after we had moved ahead. Police should carry out that investigation to establish what exactly happened with that accident.
According to the police, they're pretty much accusing the NUP of blocking roads. This is a quote, that NUP have disregarded their agreed position and continue to act with impunity, as demonstrated in today's unfortunate incident at Maya, talking about the accident. Your response to that?
Yeah, but now if you're saying that police is against our possessions, but what you have just read is talking about impunity that happened at the accident area. What is the exact impunity? I don't understand, because are they saying that the accident happened as a result of impunity? What exactly does that mean? Anyhow, that's why we are telling police, please carry out an investigation. Whenever an accident happens, there should be an investigation. The sad part is that we understand the person who was driving the car that knocked people fled the scene. Police should be actively looking for this person, okay, to establish what exactly happened, as opposed to saying impunity. Now, the person who knocked, is that one of our leaders? Is that what? How did you say impunity? I don't understand whether they even know the meaning of the word impunity. Anyhow, the long and short is police should carry out an investigation. Look for the driver who we are told ran away from the scene. Look for the driver. Carry out an investigation before you jump, you know, into any conclusion.
But Joel, what do you say to those who are of the opinion that at least your mobilization tour should have a little pause to allow the police to thoroughly investigate, since you back the investigation anyway, to thoroughly investigate afterwards, then you can continue with your mobilization tour?
What happens if the investigation goes on for a year? In our country, we have so many unresolved investigations. Police investigates forever. Now, the person who was driving the car ran away from the scene. How do you blame NUP for somebody knocking people and then he runs away? This is somebody we don't even know. Even us, we are interested in knowing who this person is. Was it deliberate? Was it just an accident? Was it, you know? So how does police get to blame us for that? Surely, that's not fair. Carry out your investigations. Let our activities continue. If this was one of our leaders, by the way, even if, let's imagine, just for argument's sake, let's imagine the person who was driving the car was one of our leaders. You hold that individual accountable, because the party did not send anyone to go and knock people.
Joel Senyonyi is the spokesperson of the Opposition National Unity Platform, or NUP. He spoke with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. In Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, lawyer Silimpilo Sicelo Mgumzulu has been elected as the new chairperson of the Pro-Democracy Multi-Stakeholder Forum, or MSF. He takes over from Thulani Maseko, a human rights lawyer who was shot 3 times through a window of his home by unknown gunmen at close range last year, according to local media reports. The MSF is an umbrella group of pro-democracy organizations, labor groups, and civil society. It seeks more democratic reforms in Eswatini that will allow citizens to choose their leaders. Government officials have often accused pro-democracy activists of using violence to intimidate and harass the population in its effort to force regime change. MSF's newly elected chairperson, Silimpilo Sicelo Mgumzulu, tells me that a group is undeterred in the commitment to ensure democracy in Eswatini.
One is humbled by the gesture, but also one is alive to the risks associated with a responsibility such as the one that I have. But believing as I do believing in the mission of the multi-stakeholder forum, I accepted to help them coordinate their efforts as they push for a democratic Eswatini.
What do you mean risk associated with this position? Because supporters of the government in Imbabani are saying that pro-democracy groups like yours are hell-bent, or members of your organization commit terror activities aimed to instill fear in the people who want to just live their lives with your call for more democratic reforms.
Well, my predecessor, Thulani Maswego, was a pacifist. He was a non-violent person. He didn't believe in violence at all. And he believed that democratization in my country can come through a process of a negotiated settlement between the pro-democracy forces as well as the government of the day. And he worked with the SADC region in the belief that there will be a negotiated settlement to resolve the political impasse in my country. And that notwithstanding, being a peaceful man as he was killed nonetheless. So one, when I talk about the risks, I am talking precisely about that, that he wasn't spared a bullet, even though he was a peaceful man.
You said you were banned from going into your own country. How do you lead an organization calling for more democratic reforms outside the country? How effective can you be in leading this charge or this call or demand?
Well, I'm currently on forced exile in South Africa. This I say notwithstanding the fact that I've been in South Africa for quite some time. But as things stand, I am not in a position to go into Swaziland. But those who approached me to assume this responsibility, they did so after I was banned from entering the country. And they believed in their wisdom that one would still be able to do precisely that. And it's not the first of its kind. Oliver Tambo, who is the former president of the ANC, did exactly that from exile in Zambia and in London during the time of apartheid in South Africa. Of course, it renders our activities a little bit complicated, but we believe that there are many, many Swazis within the borders of the Kingdom of Eswatini.
Lawyer Silimpilo Siselo Mkomezulu is the new chairperson of the Pro-Democracy Multi-Stakeholder Forum, or MSF. He spoke with me from Johannesburg, South Africa. This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from our African collection. But first, now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. The Independent Electoral Commission of South Africa promised to release today, Sunday, the final results of the just concluded elections. In any case, however, after counting over 99% of the votes, we have a picture that may not change even when the commission published the final report. Frankly speaking, in analytical terms, too much has been made of the fact that the ANC lost its absolute majority. This is not an abnormal situation. If you take, for example, the case of Singapore, after the independence, Lee Kuan Yew, the founding father, continued to amass huge majorities with a minuscule opposition. It was such that even in the Western media, he was accused of autocracy, which he was, of course, not true. But compared to the last two decades of his son's mandate over Singapore. The opposition has increased its number, and today balance has been restored. I think this is the way we have to look at the results of the South African election. Yes, the ANC is not going to have an absolute majority. But when you look at the results thus far, with 40%, the next party, the Democratic Alliance, has been able to gather almost half of what the ANC has gained, 21%. So one should not make the mistake of trying to diminish the continued importance of the ANC in the governance of South Africa. The problem will be forming a coalition, and that is going to be very, very difficult for a number of reasons. Some will say that to calm the financial markets, it will be preferable if the ANC goes into a coalition with the Democratic Alliance. But this would be short-sighted, because everybody knows the fiercest critic of the ANC in a few decades has been the Democratic Alliance. And the organizing principles and views on foreign policy and economic are poles apart. So it is difficult to see how a stable coalition could be made out of an ANC Democratic Alliance perspective, even though, as I said, from the economic side, it might be thinkable. When you turn to the rest, you can look at the MK party, which has surprised so many people, getting almost 15% of the votes, even though it has been formed for such a short period. And this, in fact, is important to note, because the media in South Africa, and not in most Western media, have put the blame on the former president, Zuma, for the problems of the ANC because of the issue of state capture. And if corruption was what brought down the ANC and also incompetence, how can you explain the fact that the same Zuma has been the best gainer in the election? In a short period of time, he has managed to gain 15%, an achievement which are normally taken for years by other political parties. This would indicate that most of those suggestions of the corruption for the downfall of ANC may not be accurate. It may well be the practical evolution of political parties over time.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. And it's Sunday on Nightline Africa. This is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent.
It is to see me and you in love like this, but baby, our matter don't be for street seat. Now come see the pressure they won't give we. I don't know why they no fit to let us be. But what since we jam, we they only feel love, loving.
Sweet sugar love.
Teasing each other, but we still not let go. Maybe old time people, we say gone, I must go. See our from family people. Tell me where to be them, oh no. They get issues so they can't stand our love. They be old time people, we say night jama school. Cut it all, twisted them, them once spoiled our love. Tell me where to be them, oh no. Can I love Nigeria, baby? Nigeria, big love, they can love you. See when they come together, just like he is supposed to be. Nigeria, guide love, can I, baby? Can I love the Nigeria, guide you? One to hook together.
the love they like supposed to be. We no stop for it. Circle to a jungle. Ah, mad love. Mad love be what we get. We the conquer them. Mad love as the sunset. I'll be buying you Prada bags and more. Honey, you making sweet macara and cocoa. We for shop some money from the oil and gold. Party with the party so. So wine and she come they go. She the wine like she dey on top of moto. Post this on a boy set, yeah, get some more. We like going down to Togo. Nigeria be love, she gonna guide you. See when they come together. Just like it's supposed to be. Nigeria be love, gonna be love. Gonna be love, Nigeria. Nice one to be together. Supposed to be even when we feel that the economic is harder. That is when the loving and the liking getting harder. Nobody be moving while you sipping on your locker. I don't want to be blinking, I just want to see you longer. You give me a melody and your beauty banger. Quench my fire within the leader water tanker. So baby, you mean more to me than CDs and Nairas. And if you wear the money, baby, I'll take up the bribe.
lighters on the beach. Maybe come close and chop the kiss. Close your eyes and make a swim. I want more like a liver, my liver. Want to see more of the figure, figure. Bring your face and chop the kiss. Shooting star now make a wish. 15 million for the week. Hold up lighters on the beach. Maybe come close and pop the kiss. Close your eyes and make a swim. Bouge, 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 bouge. Dance, 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 yeah. Bouge, 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 bouge. Dance, 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 yeah. I want more life, Oliver, Oliver. Pretty dancing, diva, diva. Feeling just in me, oh, vibe me to the beat. I want more life, Oliver, Oliver. Pretty dancing, diva. Feeling just in me, just vibe me to the beat. We been to party, you bad. Come and jam, 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 jam. Make you take in some, make me pop champagne.
And that was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoy the music from Nyland Africa here at the English to Africa service of the Voice of America in Washington. Nyland Africa comes to you from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we're on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. From the Nyland Africa team, including producer Nicole Peters and engineer the great Justin Thwaite, we say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, if you are going to live by the riverside, make friends with the crocodiles. I'm your host, Peter Clote in Washington. Good evening, Africa. Peter Wavutena Marashi Mahi. The hugger smell of all on me. She like it how I ride the beat. I whisper loving in her ear slowly. Journey cool, baby, mongoni, baby.